Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Training and Tactics Talk. The purpose of this show is to promote a roundtable chat on various topics that pertain to street firefighters and training officers from across the United States. And we would like to take the opportunity to invite the listeners out there to email in their topics to the email address of podcast@firehouse.com. I'm Douglas Klein, Fire Chief of the City of Eden, and on the show today, I'm going to be your host, and we have two great guests. The first one is Jeff Pendelski, a battalion chief with the Downers Grove, Illinois Fire Department, 18-year veteran of the fire service with a master's degree, fire officer 4, fire instructor 3, and this gentleman is the author of the RICO, Rapid Intervention Company Operations book, with Del Mar Sinage. He co-authored that book with Mike Mason. He's also a revising author on the third edition of the Firefighter's Handbook. The other guest that we have on today is Buddy Hyde. Buddy is the former fire programs director with the state of Virginia and the fire service there. Buddy is now working in the community college system as a program coordinator and person that takes care of the fire service, EMS, all that type of training with a bridge program between high school and the collegiate level in Southside, Virginia, at Southside Community College. Buddy hails from a long experience of the fire service as well, with time in the Air Guard and with the Chapel Hill Fire Department in North Carolina. And we're real excited to have folks on the show, and we want your participation. What we want to be able to do is provide you the opportunity to get the information and the training stuff that you need as a firefighter and as a training officer, and we invite you to email in your questions or your thoughts to podcast@firehouse.com. So, guys, y'all ready to get started?
Yes, yeah. I am, Doug.
Yes, I am.
Okay, what we're going to do is take a quick look at a couple of questions that we have and that we've talked about. And these are some things that are going on across the United States. And, Jeff, I'm going to start off with you on this one, and then I'll go to Buddy, and we'll talk a little bit about what has been going on for a number of years with training officers and firefighters and folks across the state when we start focusing on our firefighters and those folks on the streets of what should our efforts be focused on today in the fire service. Jeff, you're up first.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Doug. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with everybody today. We're going to be talking about today. It's been basically said that we should be focusing on back-to-basics training. That is definitely a true statement, but I will say it has been illustrated that there's just been a breakdown in basic core skills, and it continues to be a large factor in the line-of-duty deaths and injuries that we are seeing. As a fire service, we're being expected to do more and more, it seems like, every day, and the city fathers are taking more and more away from our resources and our budgets. A lot of the tasks that we are being expected to now do are advanced skills that really rely on a solid foundation of the basic skills. We can't be expecting our people to operate at an advanced level if they do not have a thorough grasp of the nuts and bolts of their job. Unfortunately, however, this really does seem like it's more of a challenge than it sounds. In 2008, we are still, in a lot of cases, setting up our firefighters to fail on the fire ground, even though they are being provided with the most advanced tools and safety equipment that they've ever had in the history of our fire service. Tactics training has traditionally been based on principles back from the 1950s, and this is something that we really need to change. We need to adjust training in those areas to reflect the environment that we are now functioning in. You know, later on, maybe in our discussion, we could go in a little more in-depth into that and really explain that. But another big part of our challenge that we face today stems from the experience level of today's fire service. You know, let's face it, overall, the number of fires has dropped dramatically over the last 30 to 40 years, let's say. We are losing more and more of our most experienced members of the fire service to retirement each day. Rapid promotion is really becoming a challenge to our fire service overall. I mean, let's sit back and realistically think about it. It is possible in some of the departments outside of the bigger cities today to actually promote a firefighter into a company officer level that has never really functioned on the fire ground yet at an actual real working fire. As we lose those experienced members, we are also being left with a generation of firefighters now that are regarded to be the most highly educated generation of our human history. But also in the same token, they do have some areas that are necessary to lead other firefighters that they may be deficient in. You know, things such as military backgrounds that stress teamwork, leadership, and discipline, they're not prevalent as they once were in past generations. Although I will say we will probably be seeing a change to this one challenge with some of the troops coming back from overseas. This generational gap, it should not be really looked at as a shortcoming, but rather, like I said, as a challenge that needs to be overcome. You know, the fault does not fall solely on that generation. They have to deal with what the economic, political, and social happenings of the time that their generation is living in. And as you know, we're seeing a lot of changes that are forcing us to do things in different ways. But back to the experience factor that I started to mention, in our field, we come upon life and death situations that demand decisions to be made that are based on incomplete information, and we have to do this in a quick manner. Seconds count on the fire ground. When we are exposed to a situation, basically our brain is going to store that experience pretty much like a slide does in a slide tray. When another situation occurs, our brain will try to draw upon that past experience or that slide. It'll try to pick it back out again that most closely matches the situation that we're being presented with. From there, we'll formulate a solution that will best fit that situation. Obviously, the more slides that we have in that bank, that will increase the odds of us successfully picking the right solution to that situation that we have. I mean, this theory has been known for years and has been practiced by the military. I want to say that they call it recognition prime decision making, but they have utilized it and it has been proven. When we talk about experience level of our fire officers now, they don't have as many slides to pick from, so they may be left shortchanged in trying to come up with that solution. You know, again, along those lines, we have to get our people to be involved in succession planning, mentoring. That's where I think our focus today has to be, also along with the back-to-basics approach. And I don't want to shortchange it, but another area that we really need to concentrate on is the fire prevention aspect, and we have to be advocates of getting fire sprinklers into every building as possible. When it comes to line-of-duty deaths, the more buildings that we can get sprinklers into, that will mean even less fires equals less firefighters getting hurt or killed on the fire ground. So that's where I think that we have to take our focus today.
Well, I couldn't agree any more with you, Jeff. As we think about training and the basics, there are so many things across the gamut that we have to span for basic training in today's fire service. It's not just fire-related. We have to deal with the technical rescue side. We have to do, you know, EMS stuff. We have a ton on our tray or on our plate to have to deal with. And sometimes we get to where we don't have enough time or we don't utilize our time as efficiently as what I think we should. And from the career side, you can probably relate to that, you know, quite frequently as I can. As we switch gears here, I'm going to go to Buddy and ask him to address this topic. And, you know, part of Buddy's background being the director of fire programs in Virginia is he dealt with both career and volunteer departments and training. And I know that Buddy has a long history of being a volunteer firefighter and in the volunteer service along with his career experience. So, Buddy, tell us a little bit about what you think about the back-to-the-basics training across the United States and where we should be focusing our training efforts on in today's fire service, especially from the volunteer side.
Okay, Doug, and thanks for having me on as well today along with Jeff. And I'd like to thank you and Peter for inviting me on to Firehouse.com podcast. Well, I was listening to what Jeff talked about, and a lot of my notes were very much overlapping. But I think what I can add to his comments are that, you know, I believe what we've got to do is more drilling. What I'm seeing today, especially this past decade, that we've been training the younger generation coming in, is we're seeing people that really don't want to drill. They would rather do training by computer or on a tabletop only, or do what we used to call rainy day drills. And typically that's what they did. We did it for the rainy days, but they like to do it even on a good day. And I'm not talking about everyone out there. It's just that we see a lot more of that, I think, the past decade. And even with Homeland Security being spun up in 2002 and a lot of our terrorism training, you know, being entered into our profession, we have lost that basics somewhat. We've had many articles in all the magazines over the past 5 to 10 years saying that we have lost basic training in a lot of localities. And what I think we need to do, it's boots on the ground, as I always like to say, training in both volunteer and career departments. Pulling hose lines and throwing ladders and doing things of that nature with the bread and butter of our business, I think still it's traditional in one way, but it's something that is timeless. It'll be done 20 years from now. It was done 20 years ago, and we should be doing it today. Those are basic skills that even though we run 70% EMS or more, we still need to learn how to, you know, take the ladders and hose off on a regular basis. We're not using those as much in the real world, so it depends on the locality as to call volume. But I think that if we focus on that structural drills, bring those back, people are usually amazed once you start your structural drill how much the energy starts elevating. And I think just getting out of the seat and getting out to where you're actually using your muscles and you know, having some blood flow, that I believe people actually enjoy these drills that are hard work. But I think it's the anticipation of the drill with a lot of the students that I see today in the firefighters is they dread the drill, but then once it starts, they enjoy the drill. And I like to call it a real drill, and that's kind of a buzzword that I use, and I think we need to do real drills. And by doing maybe you can take a tabletop scenario and complement it with a real drill, and I think that you will have you know, much better success with all the components that we use. Now, topic-wise, I think that we, you know, we do need to do, as Jeff had mentioned, go into basics, but we also need to look at, you know, in EMS, we need to look at ALS. ALS, advanced life support, is something today that we need to focus on. It's high demand, whereas a lot of people have basic training already. We need to start mentoring our people, as Jeff mentioned, into being ALS providers, because it's going to be just like college degrees are now. It's going to be looked at as being the next step for you to be able to promote or maybe even be hired in a locality. And I think that when you look at college degrees, basic fire training, and then advanced life support training in EMS, those are going to be the gatekeepers, more or less, to enter in a great profession. Education has become, and we started this effort through our FESHE at the National Fire Academy, education has become now an item at the forefront for selecting people, going into EFO program, going into a fire department. And we created that, and now what we have to do is make sure that the students mold their experience and build their experience that Jeff was mentioning to mix with that education, because I am seeing firefighters that are educated very well, but they do lack that experience that Jeff was speaking about. Finding a way, I'm sure the three of us guys, you know, Jeff, Doug, and myself, we mixed our education with our training along the way. And it seems to be a very good fit when you pace yourself to do that. And that's what I'm always recommending to students and firefighters that are just coming into our profession.
Well, that's very true, is that you've got to have this unique mix and blend in today's fire service. Some of the thoughts that I had listening to both of you guys talk and the excellent stuff that's coming out here is that we need to focus our training efforts in today's fire service based upon what our true risks are. And that's something that people come out, they shoot from the hip, they use a CAM program, they say, oh, we're going to go out and do ladders, and they throw a ladder up and climb to the first floor or to the second floor or to the roof. But what if they got this ladder truck and, you know, they've got five-story buildings? How many times have people made, you know, multiple, you know, passages up and down a ladder, carrying equipment, moving equipment, doing operations? And both of y'all talked about the realism of drills. And I think that's where we've got to get back to focusing our training efforts is, one, we've got to identify the population in our group and exactly what they need and exactly what focuses that are going to be real to that organization, that department, the types of responses that we're going to, you know, respond out to, what capabilities they have, and begin building what was called a succession plan that both of y'all have used. And I think that what we've done is we've gotten very lax and very complacent. Training should be a tool to better your department. They need to be go away from the shoot-from-the-hip approach that a lot of people are doing in training and turning to some folks that can really help them in agencies and looking to a broader perspective, or what I call the window-to-the-wider-world approach. And there's lots of agencies and tools out there. The National Fire Academy is one of the most underused components in training across the United States and through the fire service. There's other organizations such as the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, which, you know, are leaps and bounds growing, you know, working with Target Safety on distance education learning, partnering with, you know, multiple groups out there looking at the education facets of how can we enhance firefighter training with the focus on safety. And I think that's one of the biggest things we need to take our focus to training on. And Jeff, you said this about preventing line of duty deaths, and I hear people talk about this aggressive training and aggressive fire attack, but what I have witnessed is that we're not aggressive, we're reckless. And there's a difference between aggressive and reckless, and we've got to make that identification line, and we've got to begin changing our culture through training. And that's where we begin to impact the fire service, I think, the most. So, guys, let's move on up. One of the areas, and I started off and kind of leading into this question, is what areas and topics do we focus on with back to the basics training? And, you know, remember, think about back to the basics with the aspects of firefighting, with engine company operations, truck company operations, rescue, you know, company operations, those type of things, you know, for the firefighters. And, buddy, I'm going to come back to you first here. And give me your thoughts. You led into it a little bit about realistic or real training. You know, let's pick up there with this topic.
Well, Doug, it is a good a way to train today. I think when you go ahead and set up a drill, a lot of departments may stay away from this because of the logistics of building a prop or something of that nature. And you and I, over our years of working together, you know, have looked at Mayday and RIT training and things like that and building props. And, you know, with our friends, Tim Sundelbach, that actually has been showing props throughout the country, a lot of low-budget approaches are out there for building props within a fire station. And I think what we need to do is the basic structural drill should always be at the forefront, smoking up a building, not necessarily putting fire in it, and if you don't have that capability, but just smoking up a bay or smoking up a building and just having search and rescue drills. I think with the advancement of our RIT training over the years, we have become better at searching for the victim by searching for our own firefighters. So we've enhanced those skills, but we still need to keep in our mind about, you know, searching for Mrs. Smith, if you will, or a child that's in a crib or something of that nature. Is just going back to victim searches. I think that can be done in many different places around a locality. We also need to do a lot of rooftop training. I think that I'm seeing a lot of rooftop ventilation props. You and I went to South Carolina a while back, and we saw one there at the training academy at South Carolina. You're seeing those in a lot of training grounds around the country. Putting people on a roof of a regular residential type, as well as commercial, and showing the value and the safety is going to make sure that everyone goes home that has been working on a roof by showing them the skills and the things we look for. I think those are basics that we learn in Firefighter One, and we need to go back to those. I think also outside of the rescue drills themselves is integrating our incident command system into every drill we do that's of that type, to where we are given an accountability report going in and coming out, and good radio terminology throughout the whole search and fire attack. And I think by doing those things in a regular fire attack or a RIT operation is what all of our beginning firefighters need to learn going in, as well as the people that have been in 3, 4, 10 years and upwards. And as you well know, anyone that's been in 20 years or more, they still need to participate. And that's something I'd like to throw out in our podcast today, too, is that what I'm seeing, especially in the volunteer ranks, and I may be picking on some in the volunteer ranks, but I'm one myself, I see a lot of veteran officers set up drills but don't participate in those drills. And I think that it's very easy for some people to be sort of pulled to the side for a conversation while they're watching the firefighters go through a drill. And I think what we have to do is take our captains and lieutenants and even some of our chief positions and incorporate them into the actual hands-on. And that happens for a lot of reasons. People, as they get older or more experienced, may feel like they don't need to participate. They may think that observing it is all they need to do. But I think it draws a lot more respect in these particular basic, real drills if everyone is involved, and obviously with an instructor overseeing all of it. I believe that's going to be the key. I think as far as subjects, Doug, you had mentioned what else do we need to learn, and Jeff can probably weigh in on this in his comments. I think we do need to look at building construction again in a whole new light. New textbooks out there. We need to reinforce all of the things we've learned for the last 20 years from Francis Brannigan and many others. And I think that we're still seeing building collapses, especially the bowstring truss type. We need to put this into the minds of the firefighters when they first enter the fire service. And then hopefully after hearing it so many times, it will really instill in their brains. We also need to look at the extrication. As a firefighter task today, extrication is changing before our very eyes this year and next year with the new fuels that are on the highway and the new foam capabilities that we may have and the way foam reacts to the new ethanol-based products and all of the things that we're going to be seeing going into the vehicles of tomorrow. And that's actually starting today. Hybrids and alternative flex fuel vehicles are changing the way we think about those challenges and those risks. You mentioned risk. It's going to be a whole new risk for us to handle a vehicle fire and to handle a vehicle extrication. So I think we need to put that on our plate as well.
You know, you hit on a couple of good things, and one of the places that I want to tie two pieces back before we go to the break here is you talked about NIMS, and NIMS is a six-component process. Everybody gets hung up on NIMS as being that's the incident command model or whatever, but it's not. There's a lot of resource management, information technology management, looking at resources, looking at structures and data collection and all the bigger pieces that fall into there. And tying NIMS, when we have the large man-made disaster or natural disaster that comes in and we've got to work collaboratively with a multitude of groups in interoperability form, being fluent with that is going to make our basic tactics work. And that's where we don't integrate very well. We don't like to play in other sandbox. It's like, this is my sandbox. You stay out of it. I got my toys. You got your toys. My toys are better than yours. When we get away from that and we start playing together well, we're going to be doing, you know, the fire service a much better justice of how we do business. And that leads me into talking about these officers. One of the things that we've lost is the art of mentoring to basic training. The people that are standing back and are watching these drills and not participating, maybe thinking they don't need to, that's where we're missing our best key components in education. You know, the company officers are the true trainers of the fire service. They're the ones that interact the most with our firefighters on the streets and teaching them this, you know, basic training, you know, the skills, the sets that are real, you know, to the specific situations they're going to get into. And that's where we learn. And I know myself, and I think both of you guys will come back and say that you learn just as much watching and listening to somebody operate or participate in a drill that was this mentor person, that was this sharp, great officer, firefighter, whoever it was. You learned as much from them watching them as you did any instructor. And I think that's part of what we're corely missing, you know, in today's fire service. And to talk about the officers just a little bit, and you mentioned going through training. One of the things that Jeff and I had a discussion at the Southeast Association of Fire Chiefs Conference was that less than about 12% of our entire groups that we've put through rapid intervention training has been officers. So are we really knowing how to do the skills and tactics that, you know, these basic firefighters are on the street guys, you know, these companies are going to perform when we go to Mayday operations? And obviously, you know, we're missing something there. But we're at the point in time now, I think we need to take a break. One of the things we'll do, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to pick up with you, Jeff, and let you address this. And then we got one last little component I want to talk about. Just remember, folks, if you're out there listening, you know, we're going to a break. But if you've got questions that you want to send in or comments, email them to podcast@firehouse.com. We'd love to hear what you've got to say and maybe get an opportunity to address that. We'll be back right after the short break.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to Training and Tactics Talk. This podcast is directed towards training and tactics, and what we want to do is promote an opportunity for a roundtable chat on various topics that pertain directly to you guys out on the streets, you know, that are doing the firefighting, being the officers, working on, you know, tactics and training, and, of course, for our training officers who make a lot of the logistics happen. If you're a listener out there and you've got a burning issue or a topic that you would like to hear or discuss or get involved with the podcast, just give us an email at podcast@firehouse.com. Two guests with me today. I'm Douglas Klein, your host, and on the phone in this podcast with us is Aubrey Hyde, Buddy Hyde, as most folks know him, from Virginia, and Battalion Chief Jeff Pendelski from Downers Grove, Illinois. And we're talking about areas and topics that we need to focus on with back to the basics. And when we went to the break, we listened to Buddy talk about the volunteer side and some of the issues that he sees that are going on and being faced there. And what I want you to do, Jeff, is come back and give us your thoughts. You're a career guy. You're in a metropolitan area, you know, outside of Chicago. How does this fit to y'all? Is it the same? Is it a little different? What's your thoughts?
Well, Doug, I got to say, I am in total agreement with a lot of the things that Buddy and yourself had stated already. Number one being that, yes, it does start at the top. Just because you're an officer, you do have to continue training. Repetition in the basic skills does build competence, and as we all know, when you have competence, that breeds confidence, and when you have that confidence, you are able to excel at your job duties. Just to add a couple things to what's already been stated, and to add something to what I stated in an earlier question about training today, something that I failed to mention earlier with the back to basics was we need to be focusing on better utilizing the technology that's being provided to us. I feel that we're not capitalizing on that 100% yet. I mean, some examples I'd like to give would be how many of our firefighters really know the ins and outs of the turnout gear that they are wearing. You know, usually turnout gear arrives and it's just given to a firefighter and he wears it. What are its limitations as opposed to our human bodies? Now, as we know, turnout gear is designed to keep moisture out, but in that same token, it's also going to keep that moisture in. How is that affecting our bodies? When do we need to open that gear up and get out of it and get into a rehab type situation. So we have to know the limitations of that is what I'm getting at. Thermal imaging cameras, how many times is that tick purchased and just placed on a fire rig for a company to use? Do they really know what its applications are, what its limitations are, and what do they do if it does fail? You know, those are things that we have to consider. There are so many advances in the technology that we're utilizing on the fire ground now, and we have to stay up on them. And we do have to learn the ins and outs. But in addition to that, looking at the back-to-basics training, I am a firm believer that three-quarters of our time should be spent basically in a training environment, learning how to stay out of trouble on the fire ground, how to keep ourselves out of trouble. And those basic areas would be core areas such as self-contained breathing apparatus, ladders, forcible entry, pulling hose, all the areas that Buddy hit upon earlier in his discussion. Two areas that I did not mention earlier in my talk, but our keys to keeping our people safe is building construction and fire behavior. And we talked a little bit already about building construction. But predicting what a fire is going to do and how the building is going to react is paramount to our people on the fire ground. We have to remember, if something is predictable, we know it can be preventable. Earlier, I made some statements about how our job environment has changed, but our tactics have really not kept pace. At this time, I'd like to consider some of those changes. For example, fires today that we face, they are not the same fires that were fought 30 or 40 years ago. The fuel load has increased significantly over that time period. Furnishings that were once fabricated out of natural materials, they're all made out of some form of plastic nowadays. To this date, there's over 44,000 formulas for plastic registered that are utilized within the environment that we live. Where this deeply affects us, though, is in the fluctuation in the time temperature curve that we experience on the fire ground now. Flashover conditions are readily able to be obtained in much shorter time frames than they were in the past. One example to really drive this home that I can use is 1 pound of wood has been shown in studies to release about 8,000 BTUs when ignited. And that goes back to thinking about what traditionally household goods have been made out of, furnishings and so forth, years ago. You know, now to drive home today, a small plastic bag that weighs less than maybe a half an ounce, which is common to most grocery stores that we bring our goods home in, has been shown to release as much as 19,900 BTUs when ignited. We have to ask ourselves in our work environment, what does this do to our window of opportunity for rescue profile? What does it do for line selection? And what effect will this have on today's building construction? You know, going a little further into the construction, we have to know what we have in our response areas, where our people are going into. I've read some studies out there that from the building industry that are saying as much as 65% of new construction is some form of truss construction now. You know, and that same study showed that a 2,300-square-foot residence using trusses took 148 hours of labor as opposed to 401 hours of labor to build that same residence utilizing traditional methods. Now, the other thing that is really disturbing about that is it also took 26% less lumber using trusses than the traditional method. Now, again, when we talk about truss construction, you know, we're talking about less mass, less density, less material, less labor. This all translates into money savings for the builder, but it also translates into quicker collapse times for us on the fire ground when we have heavy fire conditions beneath it. You know, same thing with lightweight steel. It gets its strength basically from the shape. And as we all know, steel is affected at around 1,000 degrees on the fire ground. It starts to twist, starts to distort. And we go back again to our fire load, you know, in the BTU release. Those temperatures are much readily able to be obtained in a shorter amount of time than they were in the past. You know, our crews must pre-plan like their lives depend upon it, because really, it really does nowadays. They have to get into the buildings. They have to see what's going on when they're being renovated, when they're opened up. If you get into a building on a medical call in the middle of the day, that's your time to get in there and train after that call is over. You have access to the building, see what's in there. You know, at 3 a.m. when that smoke is down to the floor, that's not going to be the time that you're going to be able to see all the features that you need to be aware of. You know, another thing, too, is I really feel that we have to take situational awareness into consideration in our training programs. We have to be open-minded to train all our members in the proper principles of risk-benefit analysis, and we have to empower those people on the fire ground to speak up when they see potential problems. Again, this goes back to my statements I made earlier about the experience challenge that we have now. You know, of course, it is always better to have several sets of eyes looking at a potential situation than just one set of eyes and relying on them to make the right decision, especially with the experience factor coming into play the way it is nowadays. And again, you know, just going back about the sprinklers, we have to train our people about prevention and sprinklers, and they have to get that word out to the public. You know, the remaining one quarter of the time or 25% of the time that we have outside of those core basics, I believe that that's when we should be spending the time doing quality training in advanced procedures such as rapid intervention techniques, which are built upon those core basic skills, and then we could go on into the other areas such as our specialized rescue, high angle, trench collapse, and so forth. But that's where I feel that we need to be.
Well, that's really good. One of the things I want our listeners to know is that Jeff wrote a great article that was up on firehouse.com on building construction. And it was just really, really a hot topic, and a lot of folks, you know, hit upon that. And if you're looking for good training, you know, part of what you do need to do is visit firehouse.com and look at all the training stuff that does come out. And, you know, the great folks that are participating as authors and editors for this website that we're working with here, this is a tool. And I think that's where we're missing part of this when we start talking about topics and tactics. Is this is an area, or this is something we can go to and really focus on. A couple of things I want to hit on both of you guys talking about. One was situational awareness. My gosh, you know, just, you know, not long ago at FDIC, I sat and spoke with Dave Dotson and a couple of us as we were talking about, you know, the traditional stuff of tactics, you know, that was developed back in the 50s by Lloyd Lehman and the great of the fire service, you know, back then, that has just made this incredible foundation for, you know, our opportunities today. But you're right, some of our tactics are definitely built, you know, long before what we're experiencing now with the changes of building construction and all. And I know that building construction and fire behavior, the two things that have not changed in the relationship of the fire service. Now, we, you know, you're right, we build buildings drastically different. There's engineering, you know, the components that go into that for structural integrity and features. But the fire will only behave in that building as the building construction will allow it to behave. And it burns how the fire behaves in there. And when we really analyze and study these two components in the fire service, and we bring this out, and part of what we need to do is when we do live fire training exercises is watch the fire burn. Don't run in and put it out. Sit back, watch how it behaves, watch how it grows. A live burn approximately about 3 years ago. And as we were doing this, and I always love to do my fire behavior lecture, you know, as we're working through this, watching the growth, expansion, you know, how the fire behaves based upon certain building construction principles, whether it be, you know, the construction features, the architectural design, any of that type of stuff. And people looked at me that had been in the fire service for 20-plus years and went, wow, we've never seen that. You know, and I thought to myself, why not? So I think part of what we're doing as trainers is that we're not focusing on some of the key components, like both of y'all have brought out about the realism of drills, about taking, you know, the topics that are pertinent to your area. You know, the two big ones to me are building construction and fire behavior, how they relate and work on. And, you know, talking about situational awareness, you know, with Dave Dotson, we had this long, drawn-out conversation that we engaged in, and it was just phenomenal. You know, talking about size up, you know, we're sizing up a building, but we're sizing up an incident, but do we truly get the situational awareness? Do we really know
exactly what's happening, and can we anticipate what's going to happen in 5 minutes? And I think that's where we're missing some of our really hardcore key basic firefighting training, is that our firefighters don't know what's going to happen next. They can't anticipate the fire behavior because they don't know or they haven't seen. And like you said, fires are down. So if fires are down, what we need to be doing is taking advantage of every training opportunity that we potentially can have. And I had a question, you know, asking me yesterday about, you know, you get an acquired structure, or how do you go about utilizing acquired structures? And I think one of the things that we need to do is we don't always need to acquire a building to burn it. We need to acquire a building to meet training objectives. And I think back to the basics is one of those topics, is that we need to go back to objective-driven training, to where we look at the objectives we're trying to accomplish. We match those objectives with skills. We show the skills. We talk about the skills. We do the skills, and we execute the skills. And then we follow up when we match all this stuff together with the drills. We take skills to drills. So, you know, that's a big piece. But situational awareness, I think, is part of what our problem is in dealing with, you know, line-of-duty deaths. I don't think that a lot of our firefighters, like you said, Jeff, have the knowledge or the tools or, you know, really understand the things that are going to protect them, and gear is one. And you talked a lot about that, and, you know, buddy, you hit on that as well, and I think that's a key. Our training needs to be focused to make our firefighters safe and being able to keep themselves safe. And that goes back to my thought process about this aggressive versus reckless type of activity. And I really believe that across the United States, when we have training deaths, I believe that we've gone from aggressive training to reckless training. Even doing some of the basic stuff, we get out of kilter for some reason. So I think that's you know, something big. And, of course, again, for you listeners that are out there, in the archives of Jeff's work on firehouse.com is an article on building construction, and it's a really great article, and I challenge you to take an opportunity and see that. Briefly on our last question, guys, I'd like you to take just a minute or two and tell me, I'm going to start off with you, Jeff, how do we get our line firefighters and our fire officers excited again about training?
Wow. Well, Doug, it's no secret. Firefighting is serious business, and it does require serious people. And our attitudes are really the crane that's going to color our world and environment, that's for certain. But all this getting motivated and excited about training, it has to start at the top of the organization. And that comes down to all the officers. Anyone that has a bugle, they have to lead by example. They have to openly embrace training, and they have to understand the importance of it. One of the things in the fire service that we need to do is we need to start focusing more on our failures. Traditionally, we've been focusing about 95% of our time on the things that are going good for us. We have to start looking at the incidents that went wrong. You know, that real learning really takes place when we fail. Experience really is a direct result of us not getting the outcomes that we desire at times. We have to start looking at that. The near-miss reporting system is a great place to get that information, and really, I am really impressed with the job that they have done to help the fire service the last few years with what they have been doing. That is something that I really feel needs to be done. We have to look at that. As far as our own people, we have to foster flexibility in our training. We have to foster creativity as leaders with them. We have to get all these people involved and let them have a stake in it. And we have to communicate with them. We have to find out what they feel that they need. The officers, again, are the ones that are on the line with their people. We have to listen to them, and we have to empower them to have some type of control and go the direction that they want to go with the training overall.
You brought up a great point there, the near-miss reporting. You know, we've got to learn from our mistakes, and we've got to get excited about correcting mistakes, so that we don't have, you know, repeated injuries and deaths. You know, again, it's no mystery what kills firefighters. It's obvious in all the reports that come out, and they're clearly stated. You know, our problem is we continue to do the same thing and expect different results, and we all know what that's the definition of. So I think you're got a lot of good, you know, points there, Jeff. And Buddy, what's your thoughts on how do we get our firefighters and our fire officers excited about training?
Well, what I want to do, Doug, is Jeff is pretty much I echo him on everything he said at that point with the mentorship and, you know, just getting the officers excited about the firefighters as well. What I want to do is add to, for our listeners out there, you know, everyone's looking for ideas. And what I'd like to do is sort of have a spinoff of what Jeff's comments were into a little bit of creativity. This is more hands-on, not so much in the mentorship category, but excitement through creativity, I think, works very well in the fire services. We're always trying to find a way in our profession, in the fire and EMS side, to make things more interesting. And with it being interesting, it's going to be exciting. And so what I want to do is give you just a couple things that have worked for us and things that I'm working on now that we've seen some results on. We all have to keep in mind, for our listeners out there, a lot of you, you know, maybe in the category of 1977 to 2000 was your birth date. And we call those individuals the millennials. And we also know that we have Gen Xers before that and then the baby boomers before that. What's working really well in our recruits today are in the millennial category for the most part, if you're in the 18 to 20s and on up into your 30s. What we're finding out is that this generation works very well with technology. And that's 75 million of our population right now, the millennials. They're fast multitaskers. They're technology leaders. They're very independent and personalized in their work and their training ethics. Their friends are usually technology-based. They use the computer for a lot of networking. It's a social networking generation. And this is all good, and what we have to do is baby boomers and Generation Xers that are company officers and chiefs is we have to adapt what we learned to the environment of what's acceptable in their learning environment and sort of mold all of this so that we all mesh together on the same drill. Now, some things that have worked well, and I would like to suggest to our readers out there, to make excitement in your training drills is try computer-based training in your fire stations. Go and make PowerPoint slideshows on basic skills using your apparatus, your tools, your people, and just putting together quick slideshows that you can go in and view on the desktop in the radio room whenever there's a moment of downtime or just for the training part of the day. And if you do this for things like, you know, how to use your extrication equipment, a segment on your nozzles and your nozzle and foam usage and things of that nature, and actually pinpoint your specific product brands and the things that you have around your station or on the fire ground and make those into photo shows, use your own digital cameras to take these pictures, and just have those available as files in a training folder. And it's really low budget, it's easy to do, it's fun to make, but it's also fun to watch. And these are continuous until they need to be updated. Other things I'd like to recommend are making sure you train by your SOPs. And though that may not be exciting to some people, officers are usually the ones that help mold the SOPs. So getting the officers excited about the work they have done by being empowered to make SOPs is now sharing those in the training so that we know that we're in line with our standard operating guidelines or procedures. Other things are to go out and make props on forcible entry and ventilation because you can do hose line entry techniques on any given building, whether you're putting fire in it or just smoke or maybe even having an empty building. But the things that we don't see in every building is a door that we can force open, a window that we can break, or a roof that we can cut. And if you'll take low-budget approaches to that, I think the excitement will be there on that particular drill. Other things you can do for excitement, Doug, is video your drills. I think if you video your drills, then those people that I mentioned earlier that might want to be slackers, know they're on tape, know they can be seen later, may want to get involved and show their stuff, and also it gives you a good opportunity to have fun and see everyone later back at the station on your TV and say, this is what we did right, this is what we did wrong, this is how we can improve. And maybe this will add a little excitement. You know, people like to see themselves on a video. And typically, if you're doing it in a training mode and a critique, that can be exciting. Also, walk through construction sites. Jeff mentioned that construction, you know, is such a large part of what we do today, you know, reading the building, situational awareness. I think excitement comes when an engine company or a truck company can go to a local construction site and surely do this prearranged, don't just walk through, but ensure that you have an escort with the company that's building the structure. Make sure you wear your helmet and all the safety equipment, but walk through and take a look at those trusses. Take a look at those beams and the concrete and everything that we deal with. And let me also use the same idea on a car for extrication. We mentioned earlier that the vehicles on the highway are changing this year and in the next 3 to 4 years. Take a parking lot tour at a car lot. Set up something with your engine company, your truck companies, and go look at the newest flex fuel hybrid type vehicles, because guess what? Those vehicles aren't available very much in your salvage yards today. So what are we extricating on? We're extricating on 1970s, 80s, and 90s vehicles. We need to look at the new vehicles. We may not have any available to cut on, but we need to have someone walk us through this. And I think that could be exciting for your engine company to travel up. Your captains, lieutenants, and your firefighters can all, your battalion chiefs, can all be a part of that walking tour on the construction site or the car lot, and I think that works well. And lastly, but not least, is mutual aid drills tend to be exciting. Sometimes people will, as I mentioned earlier, sort of take the back seat and shadow behind a truck and out of the way on their own company drills. But when you bring the neighboring company over, they tend to not want to be seen that way, and they may become more involved in your drill. And that's a good way to make it exciting for, you know, anyone from firefighter on up through your officers. It builds relationships. It networks all of the people in the mutual aid setting, and it makes people a little more active.
Well, those are some really good ways to get some folks excited. Just to throw a couple of my own in, I want to say that realism is a real big key. When people are just out there and they're simulating, or they don't have, you know, all the components to go with the drill, they can only do a portion of the skills that they need. I think that becomes an issue to them, and they become, I don't know, stagnant or complacent, maybe with everything they're doing, and it becomes mundane. Or you know, the other side of it is, I'm going to hit on one that's probably going to step on some folks' toes, is mediocrity. You know, we settle for status quo. Here's my philosophy. There is no status quo. One thing we know about the fire service, and especially about needing to train in the fire service, is that we're guaranteed one thing, that it's definitely going to change. It's going to change very quickly, and what happens today will not be what's going to happen tomorrow. So we got to be futuristic. We got to be training on what's coming, not necessarily on what's here all the time. In other words, we've got to step out of the box and say, hey, look, you know, we may be in a small community, but, you know, Walmarts are showing up everywhere, and all of a sudden we're going to have this big box facility. How are we going to attack it? And, again, that comes to your mutual aid stuff, buddy, that, you know, we may have to go to the next district to get into a Walmart or whatever, but, you know, what are we going to do about this? You know, that's really important. You know, as we close here, training and tactics talk is going to be one of the, I think, premier podcasts to give people what they truly need for training. And I think that their key here to the fire service today is what we do in training today is going to help tomorrow. In a recent article that I have up on firehouse.com right now, part of what I put in there is a slogan that was on a wall in the training division of that department. It says, the future belongs to those who prepare. Well, our future is going to belong to us very shortly. The future is, you know, 10 minutes from now. So what we have to be doing in training, and our whole goal here on training and tactics talk, is to prepare you for the future and for what's going on today as well.
I want to thank both of our guests that are on today, Battalion Chief Jeff Pendelski from the Downers Grove, Illinois Fire Department, and co-author of the Rapid Intervention Company Operations book through Synthage Del Mar. I want to thank Buddy Hyde, who has done a tremendous amount of work in the state of Virginia and bringing the training in the state of Virginia through the Department of Fire Programs to a premier level, and all the work that you're doing now, doing the bridge programs with like the 2+2 and the 2+2+4, where we take college and high school and integrate it together for the fire service and higher educations with FESHI. I also want to throw out that if you want to see more of Jeff Pendelski, he's going to be at Firehouse Expo coming up very shortly. He's going to be talking about, you know, saving our firefighters, another one of the programs that he does. And I want to give our listeners also a couple of places that they can go and begin looking for some training stuff. The National Fire Academy and Trade. There's just tons of programs that are up there and resources that are free to you as an instructor or a firefighter or a company officer that you can get your hands on and, you know, begin using it for that, for your training, for enhancement of training programs, the utilization of trade journals. The ISFSI, the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, you can go to isfsi.org. We have the ISFSI Academy with a lot of training things going up there. I am involved with that organization as well as an officer. But, you know, we want you to come back. This is the first Bring Back edition of Training and Tactics Talk. It's been offline for a little while, and I really want to thank Peter Matthews for the opportunity to allow me to be the host of this show on this podcast. And we look forward to training your needs for tomorrow's fire service and keeping our firefighters safe. Because remember, to make everyone go home, we have to train hard, train often, and train safe. Be safe.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.